Hello there, and welcome to The Bitch Fix, a podcast for women who want to jam out on their lives, live in harmony with their hormones, and reclaim their mood, energy, and mojo. I'm Christine McCarroll, functional nutritionist and women's health straight talker, and I'm here to tell it like it is on all things health, happiness, and hormones for women. So shake off that cape, Superwoman, because we are here to launch this thing.
Well, hey girl, and welcome to episode 147 of The Bitch Fix. So on this week's episode, I wanted to get into a topic that is pretty important, and I've kind of been steering clear of it for a little while, even though it sounds super basic. So it's not going to sound like sexy or exciting to you, but I'm going to tell you, if you are having some of the symptoms I'm going to mention, you are absolutely going to want to be checking in on this. So the subject for the podcast is iron. And I'm going to tell you first why I have maybe steered a little bit clear of it, and then why I think it's important for us to have this conversation today. So some caveats here, right? One reason, this sounds super basic, right? Many of us have been checked for iron before in our lives. And actually, if you haven't, that's pretty sad, but also like not crazy uncommon. So maybe if you've tried to donate blood before, you might have been checked for iron. Maybe if you were trying to get pregnant, you've been checked for iron. Even if you were just having your normal physical, unfortunately, I will say an iron panel is actually not commonly part of a physical. Usually, if someone is doing a just like the super basic blood work for a physical, they might do something called a CBC, which is a complete blood count. If there was a problem with something, for example, like your red blood cell count, they might then go look for iron. But you can have markers of iron problems without that necessarily showing up. So I think it's important to be looking at iron specifically. So again, some other times you might have had it done. If you were, I think, did I just say this, pregnant or not? If you were trying to get pregnant or if you have been pregnant, they often are checking your iron during pregnancy. So these are sometimes you might have gotten it checked, but you might have been having a lot of these symptoms and maybe you were not thinking it was related to iron and you didn't ever get this checked. Now, why have I been hesitant to bring this to the podcast? Well, the truth is this actually, I think, is a more complex conversation than is typically happening in most people's doctor's offices. And it's also a more complex conversation than me just telling you to go out and get a supplement. So because of those additional levels, I haven't really wanted to talk about it, but that's really not fair. And so what I'm going to try to do today is take some of the key highlights of what I think is an important conversation and kind of simplifying a little bit of the complexity of what you might be looking for so that you could have a little bit more of an educated conversation with whoever you're working with about this, right? So what I will say is very rarely am I going to just tell somebody, you know, go out and take an iron supplement without having any further conversations. So the three things I really wanted to get into today are, kind of what even is this if we're talking about iron deficiency versus something like a diagnosed condition like iron deficiency anemia, why you might suspect it. So like, actually, I'm going to talk about that first, why you might suspect it, like what's going up, what's going on, some numbers you might look for either again with your doctor, or these are easy labs to access directly on your own. What some of the underlying causes are. And again, I think this is really, really important. A huge part of the conversation is figuring out why you're low. And again, why you're low might mean that you're really not wanting to just run out and buy an iron supplement. And then what the relationship is specifically to mental health and the topic I have been on a lot lately, which is ADHD. So these are some of the places that we are going to be going today, you guys. All right. So the first thing that I wanted to say again, so let's get just a little bit into why this is a complex conversation. The reason why this is a complex conversation, first of all, like I said, there can be more than one underlying reason. And so that is the biggest thing, because there can be these hidden factors. It's not always the wisest idea to just be going out and supplementing. Why might it not be the best idea to go out and supplement? Because iron is one of these things that we need to be really in this kind of Goldilocks zone, right? We need iron to function. If we had no iron, like none of our body would function, like we probably would die. So we want iron. We need iron to function. At the same time, iron is not just a mineral, which is something required for our bodies to run. It is also a heavy metal, meaning that it can be toxic if we have too much, right? So if we take an excess of iron because it's a heavy metal, it can actually be damaging to our internal organs. So do we want this heavy metal just running around at super high levels, potentially creating damage and wreaking havoc in our bodies? I'm going to say no, right? Like that sounds like a shitty idea. So we need to be paying attention to where we are in this Goldilocks zone. So we want more isn't better. Less is bad, more is not better, okay? And I'm going to reiterate that as I go through some of these kind of optimal numbers. Now, iron deficiency, some recent research that came out of, I believe, Taiwan. These are some really staggering statistics to me. Like when I first heard this, I knew there was a relationship already. As I've been getting into the details of ADHD, I knew that there was this relationship, but I didn't realize some of the relationships to some other health, mental health illnesses. So iron deficiency increased the risk of any mental health diagnosis by 52%. Right? So a 50% increase in the odds of getting diagnosed with some sort of mental health issue. Again, like guys, we go into our doctors, we get a freaking 7 minutes and like, you know, that's not even enough for half of us to say everything that's going on. We get like 7 minutes, even if we got 15, they're just trying to hit the highlights. They're trying to physically assess us at the same time. And if we're saying something like, oh yeah, I've been feeling down or I've been feeling anxious, odds are we're probably just going to get a prescription, right? And it's not that this prescription is never necessary, but it's that, okay, if there's an underlying physiological reason, we probably need to know that, right? Like maybe you just need more iron, not an antidepressant. So the diagnosis risk, any of those 52%, 47% increase anxiety, 49% increase depression. Here's one that I thought was pretty mind-boggling, 53% sleep. Right? Now, this is one that has come up recently in some of my clients who are in perimenopause. And that is because a lot of, again, we want to just put all symptoms into one bucket. So we want to say, okay, she's in perimenopause, must be just this hormonal shift that's causing a problem with sleep. Well, maybe it's that she's iron deficient, right? 53% increase in sleep problems if somebody is low in iron, right? So abso-freaking-lutely, this is something to check before we just jump onto the bandwagon of like, maybe we need a sleeping pill, right? So another cool thing that came out of this, now again, this was an interesting point of the study, but I want to be clear that my recommendation is never just to like go out and take a bunch of iron if you do not know what the heck is going on inside your body. But per this research, somebody who in the time of the study, which I believe was somewhere around 10 years, anybody who had taken any dose for any length of time of iron supplements decreased the chance of their mental health or sleep being diagnosed by 15%. So mental health diagnosis or sleep disorder diagnosis decreased by 15%, 15, if someone had taken any dose of iron supplement for any length of time, right? So I'm just going to say probably maybe the population they were studying tended to be a little bit low on iron already. So maybe there was that piece in there. All right. So now you know, like, okay, maybe this could be an issue if you're having some of these things. So besides those issues that I just talked about, those mental health issues, why might you suspect that you are low on iron? So you might suspect it based on fatigue, right? So fatigue is maybe the number one symptom. So just feeling freaking tired all the time. We need iron as part of the red blood cells that are carrying oxygen throughout our bodies. And so getting oxygen to your brain, for example, we need oxygen to feel alive and alert. So fatigue is like the number one symptom. Other things actually, again, like this sounds like thyroid issues, right? So again, if you are thinking hormone problem, maybe you should be thinking nutrients, right? So some things are feeling tired, but also feeling cold, which again, always often goes with the thyroid issues. Feeling irritable, we might put that off to hormone problems, PMS, maybe PMS because you're losing a lot of blood, or maybe even dizzy, right? And other things you might see like somebody having a headache, having a very pale color. So pallor, right? So your color is looking really light. If you are looking at your hands, so this was like a fun little test I learned when I was studying nutrition is if you pull your hand back and those little lines on your hand get bright red, that means, or it's a potential that you are sufficient with iron. Whereas if you pull your hand back and those lines don't change or they even get more pale, it might be a sign that you need to get checked for your iron. So fun little hack. You could actually be sitting, as long as you're not driving and needing two hands, you could actually just check this on your hand right now. Again, is this the same as blood work? No, but it's going to kind of give you like, it's a little like quick acid test of like, maybe this is something that I need to be getting checked out, right? So really, to be clear, iron deficiency anemia might be in the same category. They might not. So there are other kinds of anemia. I did want to call this out before I go any further. So, anemia is a medical diagnosis. But anemia, there could be, anemia is just like we don't have enough oxygen in our blood. We could have, or low red blood cells, we could have this based on other nutrient deficiencies. In particular, the second most common to iron are B vitamins. So B12 and folate are a separate kind of anemia. So if you are low in those, we might have problems with our red blood cells and our oxygenation based on that deficiency. So this is, again, this is why we actually need to test, not guess. So we need to know what's actually happening in your body. And anemia as an umbrella term might apply to iron. It might apply to other nutrients, particularly B12 and folate. So this is why we want to get checked out. This is also, again, this is adding to some of this complexity. And this is why I haven't talked about it really on the podcast before. I usually am working with this with my clients one-on-one. I hadn't even wanted to really discuss it inside my program. But one of the participants in the membership program did recently ask me to go through this with her. So I did do this inside of the program as well. But it wasn't like a foundational piece again, because there are these bits of complexity. Okay. So let's say you have these symptoms and you're feeling either like, let's say you're feeling really fatigued, or you have had really shitty sleep, or maybe you were feeling like your anxiety and depression are kind of bumping up. Then this is where we start to look at, okay, maybe we should get our numbers checked. So if you're getting your numbers checked, what are you looking for? Now, here's the thing. Again, you probably, if you see something that comes up here, you want to be working with a knowledgeable practitioner about what this means and finding out your underlying causes. We don't want to, again, just run out and take a supplement. But you can, if your doctor's not willing to run this, or you haven't been to the doctor recently, or maybe you just went and you're like, I just want to check this. These are things that you can get as direct access, like direct to consumer labs, pretty much anywhere besides states like New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, that really significantly limit direct to consumer lab testing. So here, what you want to be looking for, and these are just my top three. So my top three numbers to be looking at when we're looking at iron are, number one, your total iron. Number two, your ferritin. And number three, it's called TIBC, or total iron binding capacity, right? So iron, ferritin, total iron binding capacity. Any of these on their own is not going to be as helpful as looking at these three together. Now, I mentioned earlier, sometimes, medically, if you're just looking at a CBC, a complete blood count, someone might be looking at your red blood cell number. That absolutely can be part of the picture. Hemoglobin, hematocrit, these are other ones that might be part of your assessment picture. It's beyond the conversation today, right? I am, again, attempting in this podcast to keep things as straightforward and simple as possible. So total iron. Now, the numbers I'm going to give you, again, as I always have to do some little disclaimers here, I am not your provider. So if you are working with somebody, you need to be paying attention to them. This is not medical advice. This is me just giving you some numbers to look at on your own to see if you might want to have a further conversation, right? Other thing here is what I am talking about are optimal ranges. Now, I've had lots of conversation about this before, definitely talked about it on the podcast, but this is going to probably be different from what is showing up on your lab. So your lab may not call you out as high or low, but I'm going to say if you're outside of this range, you're outside of optimal. Plenty of literature to support me on this. And I would say you still want to be assessing underlying factors. So total iron, what is this? Total iron is just the iron that's floating around in your blood. Now, what I will say about total iron is this is a number that can really fluctuate a lot. So I don't put a ton of stock in it on its own. I think it needs to be looked at with these other numbers. If you're also tracking your iron and you are a cycling woman, you want to know what point of your menstrual cycle you're in when you track it, right? Because it can change actually throughout the day. So your total iron levels can change throughout the day. They can also change throughout your menstrual cycle, right? So if you just finished a really heavy period, your total iron probably going to be a little bit lower than if we are at the end of a cycle where you're just about to start your period, right? So mid-cycle going to be different as well. So we just want to be taking this into consideration, first of all, when you are checking to begin with, but also when you are tracking over time. If you like decided, for example, with your practitioner that you should be on some iron supplements and you were tracking it over time, it would be a good idea, if possible, to be at the same point in your menstrual cycle when you checked it again. So total iron, just the iron that is floating around in your blood, optimal range there is 80 to 100. So again, this is a Goldilocks number and you can see that's kind of tight, right? So if we get too much higher than that, again, we do not want an excess of iron. If we get too much lower, well, obviously we might be needing some iron. All right. Marker number two is called ferritin. Now, ferritin is this really interesting marker because it is, you know, it's considered the storage form of iron in our bodies. So this is normally how people are thinking about and talking about it. This is like your money in the bank, right? You have your money in your wallet. That's the total iron. You have the money in the bank, that's your ferritin. However, that said, ferritin can also be what's called an acute phase reactant, which means that if you have some underlying infection or inflammation, this number might go wildly higher. That isn't a good thing, right? It's not a good thing anyway. but we have this tight range for a reason. More isn't better, as I said, and excess ferritin, if you have a high or even in the high of the normal range, but some of these other markers like iron and TIBC are off, then this might be actually telling us there's underlying inflammation. It's not necessarily that light, nice marker of that money in the bank iron, right? So this is another one where, first of all, numbers are different for men and women. So if, I don't think I really have dudes listening to this show, but hey, if you're a dude listening, your numbers are different. And also for women, if you're cycling, it's going to be a different number than if you are post-menopause. So post-menopause, meaning you haven't had your period. Now, technically menopause is haven't had your period for 12 months. In the case of ferritin, I'm going to say just maybe a few months you haven't had your period. This is going to be a slightly different number. So for cycling women, we want that ferritin in the range of about 50 to 175. For menopausal women, 75 to 150 is kind of that optimal zone, right? So a little bit different for women, a little bit different if you're cycling versus versus in menopause. And then that final number, that total iron binding capacity. Here's how we think about iron binding capacity. This is a nice little analogy I use with my clients that might help you too. So if you are thinking about, this is how I think about it. Capacity is like, is my body asking for iron? Right? Do I have lots of capacity? Do I have lots of receptors open and available on my cells? Are they saying, please send me some iron? And I think about this like a little nest with baby birds, right? This is just how I picture this in my imagination. If you have a whole nest of baby birds and they all have their mouths wide open, they are freaking starving, right? They're like, I have these birds that nest in my flower pot every year. So I'm like, okay, they're all hungry. They are screaming. They're like, mom and dad, come feed us. Mom and dad are like madly looking around for worms. Once they've been fed, they chill out, right? They probably are not all with their little beaks open. Some of them might still be, some of them might be calmed down. And we're just going to say that's when your iron, you don't have a lot of capacity because everybody's full, right? So if you have all the little receptors open, the little beaks of your baby birds, and they're all like screaming, they are like, please give me any iron, anything that floats by, I'm going to be sucking it up. That's a higher capacity, right? And that is telling us that your body is asking for more iron. So I think it is one of the most sensitive markers. Whereas if it's a lower number, your body's saying, either I have too much, which is obviously a problem, or I just don't need any right now. Like I'm good. Thanks. Right. So that number, again, optimally, functionally, and not medical advice, the numbers I'm looking for are between 250 and 315. Okay. So this would be more of an optimal zone for like the Goldilocks just right number for TIBC. As I said, Other numbers could be part of this assessment picture, but I wanted to keep this really focused just on iron. All right. So now you know what symptoms you might be having if you suspect you might be low on iron, and you know if you got some blood work, what those functional ranges might be to consider that iron might be a problem. Now, the next part of this conversation is incredibly important, and that is the underlying root causes. right? Why might you be low on iron? Now, there is the obvious one, which is I'm just not eating enough iron. It's like you're vegetarian maybe, or maybe you're not vegetarian, but you just don't eat a lot of the foods that are higher in iron. Honestly, even a lot of processed foods are fortified with iron. It's not a great form of iron. It's not very well absorbed, but a lot of us are getting it from these other fortified foods. So it's possible that you are, you know, you're getting enough, but let's say you were just, you know, obviously not eating enough. Clearly that's a problem. It's not really one of these underlying factors I'm talking about. So you could look at your own just diet for 3 days. You could run it through some software. Like I use my favorite is Chronometer. I've talked about it before on the podcast. I will link to it in the show notes. I love Chronometer for tracking your food because you can see your micronutrients as well. But let's say you've ruled that out. You're actually getting enough iron in your food. Why might you have low iron? And again, this is where it's not just the answer of like, let me throw some iron on this. You need to know why. Like this is the whole point of functional nutrition is why is this low so that you can get to that root cause. You can resolve it at that level. Even if you need an iron supplement as I call it a bridge, right? I call lots of things bridges. So like I am all for bridges that are getting us from like not feeling well to feeling better. But you don't necessarily need the bridge long-term. So the first one is just genetically prone to low iron. Now you would know this. I've gotten a lot deeper into genetics with my clients lately. And studying this, I really find that this is like one of those key missing points. So I am super into genetics recently. So if you were working with someone who looked at genetics, you might find that you were genetically prone. There are some genetic disorders also. So there's a genetic predisposition that's just based on like your genes might be disposed to, iron deficiency or iron deficiency anemia. There are also diagnosable conditions that are genetic. That's a whole other pot. What am I talking about? Ball of wax? Ball of wax. It's a whole other ball of wax. So there may be a genetic predisposition to having low iron. You might be deficient in another nutrient. Okay. So iron, just like many, if not most of the nutrients in our body, iron does not work alone, right? We need a team to get behind iron. So if iron is in my little example here, the quarterback cannot just go play the football game himself, right? I'm not even all that into football, but it's football season. My husband's watching football. So you have the quarterback. You have to have all of the people protecting him from not getting run over by the other team. If we're trying to make a play, like there's other people who are helping him run down the field, right? So we need these other companion nutrients to help iron work. So if we're low on a companion nutrient, we actually could then look like we're low on iron. Again, if we're not addressing these companion nutrients, we could supplement iron until the cows come home and it's never going to make a difference because we need these other nutrients. All right. So what are these other nutrients? Number one is copper. Number two is vitamin A. I'm going to say these first because these are ones that I think most people do not think about and don't know that they might be low on when they are iron deficient. Now, if you're looking at copper or vitamin A on blood work, there's multiple ways we could look at this. But if we're looking at it on blood work, you would want to get serum for both of these. So serum copper, serum vitamin A, that is where we're going to actually get the most relevant data. Next one is vitamin C. More people do know about this. So if you were like talking to a reasonably kind of sort of knowledgeable practitioner, they might tell you that you need to be taking your iron with vitamin C if you're supplementing. Same thing with food, right? If you are if you're eating iron-rich food, but you are depleted from vitamin C, not going to be efficiently absorbed. So you want to be maybe eating vitamin C-rich foods around the iron-rich foods. So we do need vitamin C. It's critical if we're supplementing or if we are just trying to get this in our diet. And the last one, I think, is again, it's another one of these that is really it's underlooked. Is that a thing besides overlooked, underlooked? Maybe. Potassium. So potassium is a mineral that our bodies keep in pretty tight regulation, especially relative to sodium. So sodium and potassium are really tightly regulated. We have something called the sodium-potassium pump on every cell. Our bodies are really tightly managing this because it has to do with our cellular energy production. So you would have to be really crazy low on potassium to necessarily see this go down on your potassium marker on blood work. But there are some other clues that somebody who's knowledgeable can look for on your labs to say, okay, that might be a sign of low potassium. And again, if we're just looking statistically, and if you're in the US, which most of my listeners are, in the US, a ton of us, vast majority actually are not getting sufficient potassium from our diets. So potassium is another mineral that we really need to be able to use iron. So Another consideration here is if you have been iron deficient for a really long time and you've been supplementing and you're like, why am I not getting a better iron status when I've been doing all the supplementation? And this might be a place to look, right? Am I getting one of these supplements? Am I missing some of these nutrients? Something else I want to mention here, again, I'm trying not to make this a complicated conversation, but I have to bring this up. Vitamin A. We think about getting vitamin A from vegetables because we've been taught this, right? So like, you know, beta carotene from carrots. That is not active vitamin A, you guys. That is beta carotene, right? So we say we use this interchangeably when we're talking about food. We're like, oh yeah, I get vitamin A from carrots or other orange vegetables. What you're actually getting is beta carotene. So if you are a vegetarian or a vegan, and you're like, I'm just getting all of my vitamin A that way. Not all of us have the capacity genetically to convert that. And some of us just do it more efficiently than others to convert that beta carotene into actual active vitamin A in our bodies, right? So the vitamin A that we get from eating meat is not the same as the vitamin A that we get from eating vegetables. Beta carotene is not vitamin A. It's just a precursor and you may not be able to convert that well. So if you're eating a crap ton of carrots and it's not doing anything for your vitamin A levels, it might be because you can't convert it. So another consideration there, especially again, if you are vegan or vegetarian, besides being low iron from your diet, you might also be low in vitamin A and not able to convert that well. Okay. So deficiency in another nutrient is another reason. Third reason, you might have fibroids. Now, again, this is another one of those kind of like surprising statistics, but the odds are 70% plus of women sometime in their lifetime will have fibroids. Now, fibroids, that's a whole other conversation. Fibroids are like their growths in your uterus. They can really kind of go undiagnosed where it's not causing major problems, or they could cause massive problems for women. So there's a whole range. If you're not having problems, no one's going to check, right? So they're only going to check if they are causing problems. But fibroids are, they're like essentially tumors, but they're not cancerous. So they're going to grow. They're going to be probably growing faster than we want them, and they're going to cause problems. Now, fibroids, first of all, primary reason they're going to cause problems with iron is they're going to create heavy periods. So if you see like a super heavy, super clumpy period, one reason for that could be fibroids. Now, the why of fibroids and the why they might be worse and what we can do about them, that's a whole other conversation. But know that fibroids can cause really heavy periods, that creation of really heavy periods, and that like kind of problematic endometrial lining when you have fibroids is going to be a potential, probably the biggest reason why you might be low in iron, right? So if that's the case, while you're addressing whatever's going on with the fibroids, you might need to supplement with iron or be getting a much more iron-rich diet to be able to support that. Now, couple of the other things are going to be, genetic, again, like genetic blood disorders outside of the topic of this conversation. The last piece I wanted to say that's really important and underlooked is something going on with your GI tract. So something going on with your digestive system. Now, your digestive system is where we absorb our nutrients, right? So you absorb your nutrients from your digestive system. If you have a digestive problem, it's going to cause a problem with absorbing these nutrients. And iron is one of those that really needs this kind of magical state in the gut to be able to operate properly. So the first place this could show up is H. pylori. So I talked about this, 15 episodes back. I'm just guessing here. I'll link to that one in the show notes as well. But I did do an episode about H. pylori, which is a bug that can live in your stomach. Now, if this particular bug lives in your stomach, it can cause problems like ulcers, but it can also cause problems with absorbing iron, primarily because it tells your stomach not to make as much stomach acid. We actually need stomach acid to be able to absorb iron. So kind of side note here, I wouldn't consider this a root cause because you could just not take your, like you could change your medication, but acid lowering medications can also contribute to or lead to anemia, right? So if you have been taking an acid lowering medication for a long period of time, odds are you're going to be lowered in your ability to absorb all kinds of nutrients, but iron is going to be one of those big ones. Again, rather than saying, oh, I've gotten, you know, I'm taking this. Now I have, low stomach acid. Now suddenly down the line, I have depression or anxiety. Most doctors aren't going to be putting those pieces together, but maybe you can, right? Like, okay, been taking this a long time, not absorbing my nutrients. Maybe I'm missing out on some iron or B vitamins, and that's contributing to mental health symptoms. So that's kind of part number one. Anywhere along the GI tract where we're having issues, again, cause problems with iron absorption, right? So if you have like tons of gas and bloating, you may be looking at like an overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine. That's going to cause problems with iron. If we're looking at a bacterial balance in your large intestine, all bacteria, except for I think two strains, the last time they checked, all bacteria have a relationship to iron. So good, bad, they're both going to be using iron. So you could be having we could be feeding bad bacteria, but a huge overgrowth of problem bacteria could also be like eating a whole bunch of iron, right? So there is a ton of fascinating research about the microbiome and iron right now. Again, beyond the conversation that we are having here, but if something is going funky with your iron absorption, for sure, somebody, a knowledgeable practitioner, is going to say, let's see what's happening in your gut, because that can be really why you're having these problems with iron metabolism, right? So iron metabolism is just like, how are we absorbing that iron? Abso-freaking-lutely can be part of, related to something going on in your gut. Okay. So those are just some of the primary underlying causes that I would be considering if someone was showing up in my office, my virtual office, with low iron, right? This is not every possible underlying reason, but those are kind of some of the biggest. So genetics, you're missing some other nutrients. You have some hidden fibroids or something else going on kind of with your menstrual cycle, super heavy menstrual periods. That's a whole other issue. Or you have something going on with your gut. So those are some of the primary things. One other thing I do want to mention here, especially if you are kind of trending towards perimenopause, menopause, is it could be something to do with colon cancer or colon polyps. This is another one I do not play around with, right? So once we hit 50, I absolutely am in support of getting a colonoscopy, especially if you have any sort of a family history of anything of colon cancer, right? Again, not something to play around with. I am all for getting a colonoscopy. So people sometimes are surprised about that because I am integrative and holistic and they're like, oh, but that's such a like medical thing. 100% we need to know, right? So colonoscopy, important again, especially if you have any sort of family history, this iron that can't be rectified. This is why, again, we don't just like dump iron supplements on. We want to know what's going on in there. So if you have a family history and, or you're getting into your late 40s and early 50s and beyond, absolutely want to make sure that there's nothing going on in your colon that could be contributing to this problem. Okay. So the last thing I was going to talk about, I think I talked about it a little bit already up front, which was there is a relationship between mental health and iron deficiency. So the things that I talked about already were anxiety and depression. I want to just spend a second here on the relationship to ADHD. Now, the relationship to ADHD is because this is iron is required for dopamine production and metabolism. Now, I did that recent podcast about ADHD. I talked about it with, related especially to women and girls. And I did kind of talk about this dopamine piece a little bit there. I'm going to bring it in case you haven't listened to that episode. But the iron part of this conversation related to dopamine. So dopamine is really one of these underlying factors with ADHD. So dopamine could be that there is, genetically you have a predisposition to have a challenge either with production of dopamine or with the way that your body metabolizes dopamine. Or again, like we could be looking at, we don't have sufficient raw materials to be making dopamine. We have some sort of challenge with the way we're responding to dopamine. But all of this is related to dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter, which is just like a communicator in your brain, right? So we have these neurotransmitters. Dopamine is one of them. Lots of people have heard of serotonin, which is another one. There are others. But to be able to produce dopamine, we need to have a whole panel of nutrients. One of them is iron. So if you have ADHD, first of all, you might not even know. That's again, separate conversation. Go listen to that other episode. But if you know you have it and or your child has it, I am looking at what can we do to support optimal body function so that we have a reduction in symptoms? And this is one potential reason. I am going to do a whole separate podcast on relationship of your menstrual cycle to symptoms of ADHD. But this could be one reason why symptoms are suddenly feeling worse or looking worse. Changes in your diet overall, especially if you like recently went vegetarian or vegan, but also things like underlying anemia that's all of a sudden gotten worse. So maybe you started having really heavy menstrual periods, or sometimes this shows up a lot in perimenopause or like right before the menopause transition. All of a sudden your periods are really wonky and you could have a really light one month and then like this super crazy heavy one another month. But anytime we're looking at super heavy periods, whether that's just related to, to perimenopause or there's fibroids or something else going on, again, we're depleting a lot of iron. So we're losing iron, we're losing blood every month. And so therefore we're losing iron every month. And therefore we might be making our ADHD symptoms worse. So we need iron for dopamine production and metabolism. So if deficiency in iron can make those symptoms feel worse. So already symptoms not good. I can tell you from experience, they don't feel great. And then all of a sudden, and now it's worse. So same thing. Increasing symptoms of depression and anxiety. In that research that I was mentioning earlier, they specifically excluded people who had a mental health diagnosis going into the study. Now, the reason for that exclusion was not just because we're excluding a whole bunch of people, but to see if as people maybe had deficiency, if it led to an increase in diagnosis, which we saw that it did, right? So like around a 50%, pretty massive increase in one of those other diagnoses. So anxiety and depression based on that low iron level. So if you didn't have one at the beginning of the study and then you had low iron, 50% increase in the odds that you would get diagnosed. So if you have a mental health diagnosis, there are multiple things that I would say are underlying factors that need to be checked, but iron would certainly be right up there, top of the list. All right, you guys, I went deep on this one. This was definitely more of like a clinical podcast episode, but hopefully this has been helpful for you. If you have any of those symptoms, oh, what I didn't mention, this is like a really important one. If you're constantly feeling out of breath, so I was talking about like this oxygen thing, right? This is an oxygenation thing. If you feel out of breath all the time and there's not another reason for it. Also, if you're somebody who tends to get altitude sickness, so you go to the mountains or you just even visit a place that is at a higher altitude, it could be an iron deficiency underlying that. So anything where you can't catch your breath or you feel like you're not getting enough oxygen easily, I am glad that came to my brain just now. So like, let's say you're going up a flight of stairs, can't breathe at the top of the flight of stairs. It might not be that you need to go run some laps and get yourself in better cardiovascular health. It could be, that could be part of it too, but you also absolutely want to be checking on your iron. All right. So as I said, a little bit of a deeper dive today. Hopefully if you figured out you have some of those symptoms, it might be related. You're going to go get checked. You're going to talk to somebody about it. You're going to go online and Google Direct Access, Direct to Consumer Labs. I have a few that I like. I like Direct Labs. I like Walk-In Labs. There's one that I'm not remembering, but I will see if I can get that in the show notes. There are places you can get this stuff to check on for yourself. And if something looks wonky, obviously you want to be talking to someone to get some support on the underlying root causes. All right, you guys, that is all I have for you this week. I hope you have a great rest of your week and weekend, and I will talk to you next time.
Hey, if you've been on the hormonal roller coaster and want to know how to put the theories and strategies shared on this podcast to work for your body, I want to invite you to join me in my program, The Bitch Fix in 6 Steps to Happy Hormones. I'll help you heal your hormones naturally so you can get your mood, energy, and mojo back and live the badass life you were designed for. This is the work I've done with hundreds of women, and it can work for you too. To learn more, go to thebitchfixin6.com. I can't wait to meet you inside.